at 11. Right now it's time for Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll be speaking about barn owls. Well, one in particular, with Stacey O'Brien, author of Wesley the Owl. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is Angelo Badalamenti, the piece called Cool Cat Walk, here on Talking Animals. This is Angelo Badalamenti with a piece called Cool Cat Walk, an animal tune, as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name is Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. More information about the show and past guests, as well as archives and iTunes podcasts, I invite you to visit our website, talkinganimals.net. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Stacey O'Brien, author of Wesley the Owl, which chronicles her nearly two decades of experiences raising and living with a barn owl named Wesley. You can find out more about those experiences and about Wesley, of course, when we speak with Stacey O'Brien in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Time now for a couple of quick animal news items and or announcements. Want to briefly address the local situation with Ned the elephant. If I say much, I'll end up on the wrong side of slander laws and put WMNF in jeopardy, but I'm just outraged by owner Lance Ramos's treatment of Ned and really his track record in this realm. And certainly appreciate, though, the Elephant Sanctuary in Nashville, or near Nashville, taking Ned in. And this episode, to me, once again illustrates USDA's both laws and enforcement of those laws really need to be tightened up considerably. So if you're unfamiliar with this story, just search emaciated Florida elephant, and that should get you there, though I warn you, you may be haunted by the accompanying photos. I was. On a more straightforward and hopefully upbeat note, this Saturday, November 15th, there's a huge pet adoption expo. So come find your new furry best friend at the Florida State Fairgrounds again this Saturday, November 15th. From 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., over 30 animal rescue groups, including Humane Society of Tampa Bay and Hillsborough County Animal Services, are taking part and have hundreds of adoptable animals. For more information, call 813-367-2078. That's 813-367-2078. And also looking ahead a little further into November, Thanksgiving Day to be precise, it's Tampa Bay's third annual Thanks Vegan Feast. So, again, on Thanksgiving Day itself at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tampa. And starting about 1:30, there'll be a social gathering. And then 2 to about 5:30 is a potluck dinner. And singer-songwriter Justine Maella will perform original music promoting kindness and compassion to animals. And we're going to close out today's show hearing something especially appropriate from Justine. But all are welcome, vegans, vegetarians, non-vegetarians, others. But you do want to go to VegTampaThanksgiving.com for all kinds of information, and RSVPs are required. Space is limited, so be sure to reserve early. And I think that's it for now for our animal news items, announcements, etc. So let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Tom Shalhoub with a piece called Animal Shows on today's Comedy Corner here on Talking Animals.
I like my animal shows, right? You like the animal shows?
Yeah.
Guys like animal shows, right? Come on, we work all day. We want to go home. We want to watch animals eat other animals. It relaxes us. I don't know why. I've noticed something. I watch these shows all the time, though. Don't they always try to make you feel guilty? just for being human? They give you that human guilt trip at the end of the show. No matter what species of animal it is, they always come in with the deep voice at the end of the show when the sun is setting. The guy's like, the snow leopard has but one natural enemy. Man. Like, I'm killing the snow leopard. I don't even know what it is. I saw this the other night. I got home on TV. This is what's on TV. The condor. The condor is flying in slow motion over the Grand Canyon. And the guy with the deep voice is like, the condor used to have the Grand Canyon to himself until the white man came. I'm like, oh, you gotta make it racial, huh? Like, the condor cares about that? Like, there's some black guy hiking in the Grand Canyon, the condor's like, you're okay, dude. It's the white man I got a problem with.
Okay, that was Tom Shalhoub with a piece called Animal Shows, taken from his album Overconfident. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net, where not only all our past programs are archived, but most are now available as podcasts in iTunes. For example, our last show was Sherry Silk of the Humane Society of Tampa Bay. We also have a link to the Talking Animals MySpace. We're looking for friends. And there's a place to subscribe to our semi-monthly email newsletter so we can keep you posted on forthcoming guests, program news, and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Stacey O'Brien, so let me quickly outline a few important details about her. As I mentioned a moment ago, she's the author of Wesley the Owl, the remarkable love story of an owl and his girl, an extraordinary and fascinating memoir about O'Brien's almost two decades of experiences raising and living with a barn owl named Wesley. So with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf. Let's welcome Stacey O'Brien to Talking Animals. Stacey, are you there?
Yes, hi. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to Talking Animals. Thanks for joining us today. And I think for folks who haven't had an opportunity to read the book yet, but know that it chronicles your almost two decades together there, I guess a pivotal element for us to start with maybe how Wesley entered your life and of course, would never really have been able to be released into the wild.
Yeah, well, I was I always knew that I wanted to be a behavioral biologist with wild animals. My hero as a child was Jane Goodall, so who's the woman that worked with chimpanzees out in the wild.
Of course.
So I figured that that's what I would do. And I even learned Swahili. I was so convinced as a child that I was going to go to East Africa. But I ended up instead at Caltech after I graduated doing as sort of an assistant researcher in the owl area, working with owls. And I thought, well, this will be temporary because owls can't be possibly that interesting. They can't possibly be that intelligent, you know. I want to work with an intelligent animal. But for the first 6 months I was there, I was finding myself proven wrong. I would walk. The owls were allowed to fly freely through the hallways and the offices. So I would walk by someone's office and I'd see, you know, a scientist of great stature, you know, kissing their owl and going, moo, 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 you know. You know, snuggling with the owl, and I thought, well, that's odd, you know, because I had heard that owls didn't like to be touched, that they were completely wild. You couldn't get near them. And then I would see them playing little games and throwing pencils and pouncing after the pencils, just like kittens will do, you know.
Yeah.
And I started to hear the scientists saying things like, these animals are so emotional that if their mate dies in the wild, they die. They will themselves to die, and they'll die within a few hours sometimes of their mate dying. So that's pretty sentient. I mean, that's pretty intelligent and pretty emotional. And then I fell in love with the owls. They're like kittens on wings, you know, but they're sassier and they're wilder and they're much more opinionated and just, especially barn owls, they're very feisty. And
Stacey, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I have to ask you how they reflect that they're much more opinionated. I find that fascinating, among other things.
Well, if they wanted something and you didn't give it to them, they would scream and they'd show their talons and, you know, rock back and forth and threaten and not let go of the issue, you know, continue to demand whatever it was that they wanted.
Very tenacious and feisty.
Very tenacious.
Yeah.
So we got our barn owls from Fish and Game instead of from the wild because of this whole thing of how emotional they get when they lose their mate. So the Department of Fish and Game would get owls from rehabilitation centers that were unreleasable, like they'd been hit by a car or something had happened where they could not be rehabilitated into the wild. They're too injured to make it back in. And they came to me with a little baby barn owl who had fallen out of the nest and been found by somebody and brought to a rehabilitation center. And they knew that he was not going to be able to be rehabbed into the wild. Normally, you know, if there was a tiny baby like that, they would not let it imprint on a human, but they would use puppets to make it imprint on what they think is an owl, and then they would have to teach it to hunt. It's a very arduous process. But this guy, Wesley, had nerve damage in one wing, so he wouldn't be able to fly with the kind of endurance and speed and all that that he would need to survive in the wild.
So he was never really a candidate then for being released.
No. So they needed somebody that would go and raise him 24/7 like an infant. I had to have him in my arms 24/7 for about the first month and a half.
And Stacy, I'm not sure we can get much further into a conversation about Wesley or about your book without talking about mice. I guess I came to the book knowing a lot less about owls than I thought, because the mice situation was just something of a revelation to me. Maybe you could talk a bit about Wesley's diet, what sort of challenges this posed at times, and maybe in some of the misadventures the constant quest for mice caused over the years.
Well, barn owls live on mice. I always say the mouse, the whole mouse, and nothing but the mouse. You know, they can't eat any other kind of food, really. They can't have, you can't take meat and roll it in calcium like people used to do. You know, it has to be mice or voles, or, you know, it has to be a full rodent. They need all the parts of the mouse, so, or else they'll die of a metabolic bone disease. It's very painful and horrible. So, you know, so what they do is if their body, they swallow the whole mouse. Sometimes when they're adults, they swallow it whole. And then the acid and gizzard in their stomach tears all the meat off and all the organs and absorbs everything except for the bones and fur. And then they spit up a pellet, which is the bones and fur. And that sort of also cleanses, helps them to release toxins out of their system too. So at first I thought, okay, no problem. I've got it handled. Caltech was going to just provide me with big bags of frozen mice. But then there was a statewide shortage of mice, and everybody was scrambling for their own mice, all the raptor centers and all the snake owners and all the zoos. And Caltech said, you know, you're on your own. You're going to have to get your own mice, and you're going to have to kill them. And I had not thought, believe it or not, about that, that I was going to have to kill mice, you know. And, gosh, I don't even kill spiders, you know.
Right. Surprising that's part of the gig suddenly.
Oh, my gosh. It was horrible. And, you know, I never got used to it. You'd think that you would, but I never got used to it. But, you know, that I didn't set the system up. I mean, you know, they have to eat mice. And, you know, if you're a mother and your baby can only eat mice, guess what? You're going to kill mice, you know. It's just you're going to do what you have to do.
Sure.
And I was completely smitten with him from day one. I mean, he might as well have been a human infant. Not that I thought he was, you know.
Right.
But I was completely sold that I wanted to get to know this animal, this being, you know. And so the way I raised him was to have him be as much like an owl as he possibly could. You know, I tried to be as much like an owl mother as possible and not try to train him to do anything. I didn't try to change his behavior. I was there to learn from him, too, you know.
Sure.
So I treated him as an equal, sort of. I mean, not completely, but as much as I could. And the way I looked at him was that, and the way I began to look at him because of his remarkable intelligence, is like, you know how space scientists are looking for intelligent life on other planets? Well, I started to realize that Wesley was that same sort of intelligent life that's sort of other. It's the other kind of intelligence,
mm-hmm.
but it's still extreme. And it's something certainly worth studying and getting to know. And so for me, it was as exciting to get to know Wesley possibly as it would be for a space scientist to meet up with another intelligence from another planet, you know?
Absolutely. And Stacey, let me first just let our listeners know that this is Talking Animals, and if you just joined us, we're speaking with Stacey O'Brien, the author of Wesley the Owl, The Remarkable Love Story of an Owl and His Girl. So if you'd like to join the conversation, ask Stacey a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. And, you know, Stacey, as you were talking there, I just sort of realized, I'm originally from Southern California, but it occurs mm-hmm. to me that for some folks listening, maybe you should just take a moment and just talk a little bit about Caltech and just sort of what that is and what it means for folks who might not be as familiar as I would be.
Caltech is sort of the Western version of MIT. I would say MIT is sort of its sister school, if you know Massachusetts Institute of Technology. So it's California Institute of Technology, and it was founded about the same time and has the same number of Nobel Prizes and all that.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much all science, and they own JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratories, is one of their laboratories. I don't know if a lot of people don't know that. And that's where the space program mostly comes from.
Sure, and that's why when you're talking about sort of him being an equivalent of a creature from outer space or another land, it made me think that we should maybe put Caltech in a context. Because, again, obviously it's an enormously prestigious institution with all kinds of research going on there.
Yeah, I actually, when my sister and I were little, our dad was involved with all the space programs and very deeply and on a high level. And so we got to go to the first Viking landing to sit in mission control with the other scientists and see if it worked or not. And so it was like 4 o'clock in the morning, and the first strip of data came down from the lander, and someone said, "Is that a rock?" You know, and they didn't know until that moment that it had worked. And when they saw that first strip of the red landscape with the rocks, they all burst out cheering and burst into tears and were crying and hugging each other. And Carl Sagan was there. You know?
Wow.
So that's the kind of atmosphere that I grew up in.
Sure.
Too. And so to me, the scientists were my heroes. You know?
Yeah. Well, and kind of on a related note, Stacey, I mean, one of the things we really come to understand through your book is the enormity of the commitment your relationship with Wesley required from you. I mean, what are some of the traits of a barn owl, particularly as that owl moves from infancy to adulthood, that had a particularly significant bearing on you and your relationship with Wesley?
Well, as an infant, for example, I learned very quickly that I had to follow the rules of what I coined the phrase of the way of the owl. In the wild, the mother never leaves the nest while the babies are being raised, and the father does all the hunting. So I learned very quickly that I could not leave Wesley at any point. I had to have my hand in the box that I carried him around in and touching him at all times, or he would just go nuts. He'd start screaming, and the screaming sounds like, you know, an 18-wheeler losing its brakes. It's no small thing. You can't ignore it. So I had to carry him into the grocery store and everywhere. I had to carry him with me. And then later, when he became an adult, he decided that I was his mate, which is the best possible scenario if you're going to study him. But not the best possible scenario for other things, like having a social life.
Yeah, well, that, in fact, you sort of detail how your relationship with Wesley sometimes thwarted your relationships with human males.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about that. And then sort of on the other hand, in the post-Wesley years, I'm sort of curious, you know, have you found that Wesley is in some ways a tough act to follow?
Oh, yeah. Nobody can quite live up to Wesley. Wesley was so completely dedicated to me as a mate. Owls absolutely dedicate themselves to their mate. I mean, he tried to feed me mice every single day, and if I didn't pretend to eat the mouse and convince him that I'd eaten it, he would just panic and go ballistic, and he wouldn't rest until he thought I had eaten a mouse.
Yeah, and I remember at least one scene where at least maybe this was early on, where you sort of, you know, half-heartedly maybe initially pretended to have eaten the mouse, and he wasn't buying it. I mean, he was like, making sure that there wasn't any sleight of hand or whatever. So
yeah,
it
he found it. He looked up my sleeve, and he found it, and he got really upset. So that's what I mean about they're opinionated, you know. They don't just take it easy, you know.
Yeah.
So with guys, one time Wesley attacked a boyfriend. That didn't exactly help the relationship.
For sure.
You know, but also Wesley turned out to be a good litmus test because there were guys who were actually jealous of him, and that was to me so infantile that I realized immediately that, you know, that same guy, if I married him, you know, women are thinking about that when they're in their 20s and 30s. If I married him and had kids, he'd probably be jealous of the kids, you know?
Yeah.
So that type of thing. So Wesley actually helped me to ferret out the personality of guys a lot faster, I think, than I would have otherwise.
Wow, that's interesting. Well, a couple of quick things here, Stacey. One is I just got an email from someone saying a wonderful show, and I just bought the book online.
Oh, cool.
So that's from Robin in cyberspace. And what you're just saying now kind of reminds me of a question I had. Sort of most of us don't really have an opportunity to live with a barn owl, obviously, and typically we don't really have an opportunity to read about someone who does live with a barn owl. So I guess probably not alone in being fascinated by how differently responding to or sometimes disciplining Wesley was from doing those things with, say, you know, a dog or another animal
right.
that people more typically would live with. Can you maybe talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you can't. You absolutely cannot discipline an owl, especially a barn owl. I mean, they're a wild soul. And the difference is barn owls are completely solitary animals in the wild. So they don't have a flock instinct or herding instinct or pack instinct. So we're used to working with animals that have that instinct. So like with a dog, if we say, hey, stop that, and we slap them a little bit or cuff them or something, in the wild, in the pack, they do that with each other. They snarl and snap at each other to establish boundaries and say that's not acceptable behavior to each other. And it's understood amongst them that that is not a threat on their life. That's just it's symbolic. Well, with a solitary animal like Wesley, anyone, if I did that even once, he would regard that as a threat on his life. And from then on, he would not trust me. He would always remember that I tried to kill him. In his mind, that's what that would mean. So I couldn't raise my voice to him or be rough with him, not even once. And the thing is a lot of people, you know, think, well, I've been working with animals for 30 years, and I know what I'm doing. And they go and try to work with an animal that lives in isolation in the wild, like a barn owl, and they do all the things they did with all these other animals, and the barn owl gets more and more upset and more distant and more frightened, and the person gets more and more frustrated, and they conclude that the owl is stupid.
Right, because, again, it seems like how even if you were, like you say, were very kind of knowledgeable and experienced working with animals, it's sort of counterintuitive. Mm-hmm. In terms of really the best way to function with the a bird or an animal like Wesley.
Yeah, I mean, and even most birds have a flocking instinct. So
yeah,
we're used to working with birds that have a social underlying, the same set of assumptions that humans have.
Right, so it kind of relates generally with those other birds, but not obviously in the case of a barn owl.
Right, or most birds of prey, actually.
Right. Again, this is Talking Animals. Our guest is Stacey O'Brien, the author of Wesley the Owl, The Remarkable Love Story of an Owl and His Girl. To join the conversation, please call 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. We have a few more minutes here. And so Stacey, Wesley's life with you began, you were at Caltech, which we sort of noted, doing research, and so living with Wesley was something of a research project, in a sense.
Yeah.
And on some level, that continued to be the case, even as your professional path veered into a different field. I guess I'm curious, from this vantage point in November of 2008, what would you say are the research implications of your nearly two decades with Wesley?
Well, the most important thing is that he used the auditory cortex, which is the part of the brain. I mean, we have a huge visual cortex, so we tend to think of things in terms of a visual map of the world. Like, we can picture things around us. And well, owls have an auditory map, and that takes a long time to explain that thoroughly. But as a result, Wesley used all that massive auditory processing to understand what I was saying, and I didn't know he was doing it until a few years into it. He was actually processing my language, the things I was saying to him, and then he took the logical leap, and he figured out the concept of symbolic language, and he developed his own symbolic language using variations on his own sounds to communicate with me. And again, it took me a while to figure out that that's what he was doing. So that is just huge. And it's interesting that the book Alex the Gray is also coming out, because that's another bird that processed English and mm-hmm. was proven to understand language. So that was probably the biggest thing.
That he was capable, really, of a whole different set of language understanding and
mm-hmm.
and delivery, really, than people would have otherwise had any occasion to know.
Yeah, and his intelligence was extreme. And we're finding that with more and more animals. The more animals we find, I think by now it's crows and ravens and I would say barn owls and the African gray and border collies are all testing around the age of a human at about age 5. And, of course, chimpanzees and a lot of other primates. So it's astounding that we are facing the fact that a lot of animals are much more intelligent and much more emotional than we ever thought.
Yeah.
And another thing I was able to prove was that his different vocalizations were individual. They weren't just robotic like a songbird's vocalization.
They were specific
to
that situation. Yeah. Stacey, let's try to take at least one call before we have to sort of wind things up here today.
Okay.
Hi, you're on WMNF with Stacey O'Brien on Talking Animals.
Hi, my name is Shelley. I live with an umbrella cockatoo, and I've just finished reading both your book and Dr. Pepperberg's newest book. I just wanted to say I love your writing style, and I love the story that
you
told. And I really, a lot of the behaviors just crack me up because they're so similar to what my cockatoo does. Stuff and yelling and the trying to mate with your arm.
Yeah, we had an umbrella cockatoo, Wendy, my roommate, and I, during the time that I had Wesley. So we had the umbrella cockatoo on one side of the house, you know, and Wesley on the other side of the house.
I read that. What were the biggest differences other than the socialness of cockatoos that you saw in behavior between the two birds?
Oh, boy, that's tough. Wesley was, Wesley was obviously wilder.
Right.
He was just a wild creature. He was easily frightened, easily startled. You had to walk carefully and slowly and use slow movements and keep your voice down. You know, whereas Omar, the umbrella cockatoo, was much less startly, you know. He was much more relaxed. And also, Wesley had no interest in music at all. He didn't respond to it. It just seemed to irritate his ears. And the umbrella cockatoo, you know, liked to sort of dance and try to sing to the music. You know,
right.
If you put music on, he'd bob his head and start screeching along with the music.
Mine dances in the car.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks so much for your call and your question. Unfortunately, we are sort of even past the end of our time here a little bit, so I just want to say that we did get a couple of quick email questions since that caller called in. One says, do owls have many babies? Maybe you could just give us a one-sentence answer to that, Stacey.
Yep, they have 5 babies, one each day, so that one baby is bigger than the next, which is bigger than the next, which ensures that the biggest and strongest baby will survive even in a lean year.
Wow, cool. And another says, are you still involved with owls? Your story is fascinating. Thank you for sharing. So, as we sort of wind up here, Stacey, are you still involved with owls?
Yes. I help people who have unreleasable owls. I help them to work out problems that they're having with the owl. And I'm trying right now to get a permit. See, Wesley's permit died when he died.
Mm.
It was a research permit for just one bird.
Sure.
So I'm trying to get a permit so that I can take another unreleasable barn owl.
Cool.
I would really like to do this again.
And I guess maybe people could sort of track at least the Wesley and maybe other things as you unfold that that new sort of endeavor with at wesleytheowl.com, correct?
Right. And I have a blog, and then I'm going to be writing another book called The Way of the Owl.
Great. Well, let's just remind people again that the current one is Wesley the Owl, The Remarkable Love Story of an Owl and His Girl. The author is Stacey O'Brien. Thanks again for joining us today on Talking Animals, Stacey.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it very much.
Okay, great. All right, so I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net, where I hope you'll visit to sign up for our email newsletter, subscribe to our podcast, check out our MySpace, and more. It's all found at talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, a Talking Animals baseball jersey, to the first person who calls in at 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. Thank you. Okay, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. The program airs twice a month, specifically the first and second Wednesdays of each month. So we'll return again Wednesday, December 3rd, and I hope you'll join me then. Let's see. Hi, you're on WNF. You know the answer.
Hey, is that Pink Floyd Sheep?
That is. What's your first name?
Oh, Christ. All right, man.
What's your first name?
Real quick. I'm Drew.
Okay, Drew, stay on hold. We do have a winner, folks. All right, so we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. The program airs twice a month. Like I say, we'll be back Wednesday, December 3rd, and I hope you'll join me then. Again, our website is talkinganimals.net. I am Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal song. This is Justine Mayella, who will be performing at the Thanks Vegan Feast. Again, visit VegTampaThanksgiving.com for details. And this is her song, appropriately enough, called Celebration for the Turkeys, right here on WMNF Tampa. We'll catch you next time.
The happiest time of year, they say, a joyful time, the holiday. Our friends have traveled from far away to join us on this festive day. The table set with a fine array, so bountiful, let's not delay. For all we're thankful for, we pray, and bless this meal we share today. No animals were forced to die. Instead, we celebrate their lives, for life is precious and profound. Just stop and look around. We gather here on this holiday, while animals, they romp and play, or sleep together in the hay. We know it's supposed to be this way.